Chapter 24. The Infinite. Evangelos died first. The lupine mutant snuffled at the head of the search party, senses alert for any sign of its master's enemies. The shot, when it came, was loud in the vast space of the hangar bay. Evangelos pitched backwards, head a red ruin.
"Spread out and take cover!"
Merix drew his bolt pistol, searching for targets. His followers sought cover among the gunships and fuel cylinders. A second shot followed the first, this one from the direction they'd come. A space marine staggered forward, half of his head missing. He turned slowly, awkwardly, Bolter stuttering out a blind reply to the shot that had killed him. As the body toppled backwards, Merix saw the first of the mutants emerging from the forest of machinery.
"Targets! Mark Alpha Sage!"
he roared, firing his bolt pistol. The twisted creatures swept towards the Emperor's children in a howling tide of flesh. Auto pistols and stub guns chattered, low-velocity rounds flattening themselves against garishly painted ceramite. Merix's warriors endured this first fusillade easily, but the mutants outnumbered them 10 or more to 1. And not all of the creatures were stunted weaklings. Some of them were hulking horrors, studded with bony carapaces and great tearing claws. The giants crashed into the space marines with brutal enthusiasm, attempting to tear them limb from limb. The Emperor's children met their attackers with equal fervor. Howling and laughing, they trampled, hacked, and shot the deformed subhumans who sought to drag them down, slaughtering them in their dozens. The battle swung in their favor slowly but surely. A single space marine was worth a dozen lesser foes, if not 100. Then, suddenly, something new came among them, and space marines began to die. Merix stared in growing horror at the thing that rampaged across the flight deck and through the ranks of his warriors. A giant, clad in rudimentary armor, stained a royal purple. The blade it wielded was little more than a massive cleaver, but the being used it with a skill and grace at odds with its crudity. The saw-edged bite sank into ceramite with ease, rupturing the flesh and bone within. A space marine was flung high by the giant's backswing, his body unravelling as it travelled the length of the bay. Empress children moved to attack, but hesitated at the last moment, leaving themselves inexplicably vulnerable. Even those with clear shots seemed disinclined to take them. Merix knew why. He could feel it as well as they. The hideous, pressing familiarity of their opponent. The way it moved, the way it fought. But it couldn't be. That was impossible. It simply could not be. Not here. Not now. Something struck his shoulder plate, spinning him around with painful alacrity. He saw Igori through the press of battle, shuriken pistol in hand. She grinned fiercely and fired again, striking him in the chest plate. He staggered back, returning fire, grateful for an enemy he could understand. She ducked and weaved through the fray, moving far more quickly than any normal human. Targeting runes spun about her form in his display, trying to lock on, but to no avail. He fired regardless, trying to anticipate her. Mutants fell, their skulls and chests ruptured by his shots. She slid behind a space marine, a blade in her hand. Even as he fired, she drove the knife through the seals in the warrior's helmet, opening his throat. Blood spurted from the wound. Merix's shots punched craters into the legionary's chest plate and knocked him backwards. Igori was forced to fling herself aside to avoid being crushed, the shuriken pistol clattering from her grip. Merix stomped towards her, shoving his way through the melee. He fired again, nearly taking her leg out from under her. She stumbled on the torn deck and fell, but rolled to her feet. As she rose, he was on her, batting her knife from her hand and catching her by the throat. Inexorably, he carried her backwards and slammed her against the hull. Her fists slammed into his torso and arms, leaving behind bloody prints. He set the barrel of his bolt pistol against her skull. Her skin reddened and began to smoulder from the heat of the weapon.
"It did not have to come to this," he rasped. "You could have served us as you served him."
She bared her teeth at him.
"No,"
she spat.
"We could not. We have slaves enough at any rate."
Before he could pull the trigger, something clamped about the back of his helmet. Pressure seals whined and burst as the ceramite buckled. He released Igori and swung his arm back, firing blind. A powerful blow hammered the pistol from his hand, snapping the bones in his arm in the process. A moment later, he was wrenched from his feet and flung backwards. He crashed into the side of a gunship, denting its hull, and crumpled to the deck. Damage runes flickered across his display as his battle plate began to redline from the impact. He felt as if he'd been struck by an artillery round. The giant strode towards him, the deck shuddering beneath its tread. "You will not harm her. You will harm no one." The creature's voice needed no artificial boosting. It thrummed out, filling the deck and stifling the sounds of battle. It was the tolling of a bell, the crash of a cannon, the sound of the sea lashing against the shore. The sound of it pierced Merrick's to his core, wounding him more deeply than any physical blow. He knew that voice. Every son of the Third Legion knew it, as they knew their own. The voice that sang in their blood and whispered in the back of their minds, the voice of one who was as much God as Father, who had guided them out of slavery and into the terrible wilderness of freedom. As it tolled out, the fighting came to an end. Some Empress children retreated, but others sank down to their knees, murmuring a name. The name. Fulgrim. The risen phoenix. Merrick's groped for balance, trying to pull himself to his feet. The giant gave him no time. A hand caught his throat and lifted him. Merrick's gasped as he was shoved backwards, further denting the hull of the gunship. Through the visor of the giant's helm, lavender eyes fixed on him and cut away at his soul. "You are in pain. Let me help you." Merrick's cursed as the giant's grip tightened. He clawed at the helm with his false hand. It came loose from the reinforced gorget and fell to the deck with a hollow clang. The face of his gene father stared at him, anger writ on his perfect features.
"It can't be," Merrick said,
his voice rising to a howl of denial.
"You are not him."
"I am,"
Fulgrim said. The grip tightened, vice-like, inexorable. Merrick's could not breathe, could not even speak. His denials strangled on his lips, unspoken. He could not even ask for forgiveness. As the darkness swept in, the Neverborn were waiting to greet him. It was all going wrong, and very quickly, Arian thought, as he made his way to the command deck, accompanied by a phalanx of mutants. Fighting had broken out all over the ship, thanks to Igori and the others. They were staging hit-and-run attacks on the Emperor's children, paying little attention to the allegiance of their foes, save that they wore the heraldry of the Third. Weeks of frustration had boiled over into violence, the very thing the Chief Apothecary had been hoping to avoid. At least until the odds were more in their favour. Privately, Arian was pleased. It was best this way. No more false fighting, no more play-acting. Simple murder, and an end to recent annoyances. Nonetheless, there were difficulties. Strong as the new men were, they were not the equal of a space marine. They could drag down isolated warriors easily enough, but when it came to a stand-up fight, they would come off the worse every time. For now, they seemed to be holding their own, but it would not last. He had come to take control of the command deck, while Alkanex was otherwise occupied. From there, he could enact a stalemate, at least. It was a good plan, he thought, and one he'd had in mind when he encouraged Igori to follow her instincts. The Chief Apothecary would disapprove, but he would see the necessity. Fabius was too much the perfectionist at times. Like all his legion, he chewed strategy like tough meat, gnawing it over and over, prevaricating until the last possible moment. Alkanex was the same. Arian had read it in his movements earlier when they'd sparred. The need to show off, to make a grandiose statement from a simple killing thrust, had always been the Third's weakness. It had only grown worse since the end of the Legion Wars. They grubbed among the ashes, seeking even the faintest motes of glory. Wolver was waiting on him.
"That Vesalius is unhappy,"
the overseer intoned, one hand resting on the bolt pistol holstered on its hip.
An understandable reaction, Arian said, brushing past the creature and heading for the tacticum dais. The mutants he brought with him moved quickly to secure the bridge. And a state of affairs I shall rectify directly. If he could lock down all non-essential bays, he would isolate Arcanexus' forces, preventing them from reinforcing one another or regrouping. Then it would be a simple matter of attrition. Once the chief apothecary had returned from the surface, the matter could be settled at their leisure.
The Versalius is unhappy,
Wulver repeated, following him. Arian turned to reply. As he did so, he heard the crack of a bolt pistol. Wulver suddenly squalled, spun and fell, vital fluids leaking from its cracked skull. It was impossible to tell whether the creature was alive or dead. Arian turned to see Arcanex striding up the steps, smoking bolt pistol in hand.
I knew one of you would try to commandeer this deck, the prefect said. I'd half hoped you'd be smart enough to stay out of it, Warhound, but I should have known better.
Down below, the bridge erupted in a firefight. Empress children moved among the sea of control thrones, hunting down his mutants. Arian growled low in his throat. His hands dropped to his blades, and Arcanex stopped.
Don't,
he said, as he was joined by more warriors who kept their bolters trained on the World Eater. Arian flexed his hands, feeling the bite of the nails. This was the moment they were made for, and it was hard to ignore them.
And why ignore them, dog brother? What has it ever profited you?
Quiet,
he murmured.
What do you want?
The location of Bile's cloned bodies, Arcanex said. I know there is more than one aboard this ship, and hundreds more besides. I want them.
Eidolon wants them, Arian said.
Arcanex shrugged.
One or two. Fabius is a beast in need of a chain. He always has been. I will put him in that chain, but to do that I must make sure he cannot escape. I will destroy his bodies one by one until he is trapped in a single sheath of flesh like the rest of us, and then I will end his madness once and for all.
He laughed.
But while I seek out and destroy his hiding places, my lord Eidolon will get some use out of him. Now, tell me where they are.
No.
Arcanex nodded.
Then I will claim your head, crack it open, and take what I need. I am not the only foe you should fear. You won't be able to bargain with Ramos and the others,
Arian said.
And they will move through the ship like a song of death if you infuriate them. Then it is a good thing I've decided to ignore them, and that creature they worship until later. They do not care who commands this vessel, and once they are isolated, they can be dealt with easily enough.
Arcanex lowered his pistol.
We do not have to be enemies. The new third will be built on the ashes of the old loyalties, even as Abaddon builds his own Black Legion. Why wear the blue and white when purple suits you better?
Arian laughed harshly.
And how long would I last in your new legion? How many of your brothers would I have to kill to earn my place?
He spread his arms.
Better still, why do you not see that this will only end badly for you? I have the advantage,
Arcanex said. He holstered his weapon. His warriors were moving forward as if to take Arian into custody.
Every man thinks that, right up until he doesn't.
The nails cut at him and he winced. The red fog pressed close, and he felt a spurt of anger that it should come to this.
Aye, you hear us now, dog brother. We tried to tell you what was needed, and you refused to listen.
Braeus's voice scratched across his mind like the nails themselves.
Kill this peacock, crack his bones, and drink the sweet marrow. It's the only thing his kind understand.
Arian frowned.
Stand down, prefect. This ship will not be yours while I stand.
Arcanex laughed.
Then it will be mine shortly.
Arian looked around. Enemies on all sides. Good. That made things simpler. He brushed his fingers across the skulls as they whispered their bitter encouragement.
Then his hands dropped to the hilts of his blades. "You're going to need more warriors, High Rider," he said, as he flushed the last of the carmatives from his system. As the nails bit, he smiled. In the shadow of the tears, Savona cursed and emptied her weapon into a hollow-eyed silver skull. The automaton pitched backwards, but there was no time to reload. She holstered the pistol, took a two-handed grip on her maul, and swung it in a wide arc, knocking another automaton from its feet. She stamped on its head as it tried to rise, and felt its skull crumple beneath her hoof.
"Keep moving! Back to the gunships, fools! Unless you want to live out the rest of your very short lives here in these haunted halls!"
"A magnificent plan," Scarlagrim growled as he hacked at a fallen machine. "Only there's an army at our backs with no intention of letting us go." The former son of Horus held the unconscious form of one of Bile's glandhounds over his shoulder. Of the two who'd accompanied them, one was dead. The other had been knocked senseless by Palos and had yet to recover her wits.
"Why did you bother rescuing that thing?" she asked, glancing at his burden. "It's only slowing you down."
"I can keep up with you, woman, don't worry. Besides, the old monster will owe me a debt for saving his precious beast." Scarlagrim laughed and stroked the unconscious glandhound's head. "And so will the queen beast herself. Maybe it'll keep them from cutting my throat one day." He swallowed his laugh as a damaged construct lurched up, grabbing at his legs. He kicked it back with a curse. "See? How are we going to get past these things if they keep getting up again?" A moment later, Pazuz pounced on the wounded machine, bowling it over. Korag strode past, the vents of his armor spewing corrosive gases.
"Good beast," the Grave Warden burbled. "And in answer to your question, brother, we simply knock more of them down until they give up."
He set his feet and fired his Stormbolter. Sakara's harsh voice rose to a commanding shriek. Formless demons suddenly surged past them. They were lesser things, lacking a god-given shape, but strong enough to sweep metal bodies aside or occupy the hovering wraith shapes that had stalked the retreating space marines since Fabius's disappearance. There were only a scant few Empress children left, a bare handful of those who'd landed, but enough to pay Merix and Alkanex back for their treachery, if she got the opportunity. If they managed to escape the silent horde seeking to obliterate them. Arcs of green energy seared the air overhead, then fell silent. She skidded to a halt as the causeway and the platforms upon which the gunships waited came into sight. Two of the gunships burned, their hulls scored by green flame and cracked open. The third appeared to be in one piece, but only just. The bodies of the guards lay scattered on the ground in various states of mutilation, the heavy stubbers shattered and silent. She saw no sign of Belophus, and the thought sent a pang through her. He had been loyal in his way, and had followed her from one master to the next. A steady presence, and if he were dead, she would have one less supporter. She started forward.
"Savona, wait!"
Sakara said, grabbing her arm. "Look!" She whirled with a snarl, ready to smash the word-bearer from his feet for his temerity. But the blow never fell, so preoccupied was she by what she saw. The ranks of their pursuers had come to a halt at the galleries that marked the outer edge of the tier. The warrior construct stood silent and still for long moments before turning as one and marching back into the maze of galleries. Even the broken ones crawled away, repairing themselves as they went.
"They're retreating," Sakara said, lowering his bolt pistol. "Why?"
"As I said, we merely needed to knock enough of them down," Korag rumbled. "Or perhaps they already have what they came for," Savona said. "Either way, I don't intend to wait and find out. Keep moving."
She started towards the remaining gunship. As she started to cross the causeway, she saw a familiar form step down out of the gunship, a heavy stubber slung across one broad shoulder, and its ammunition belt draped across his chest. Belophus. His armor was scorched and marked by the automaton's weapons, but he was still in one piece. He waved a greeting from the ramp of the craft. The vox crackled, and she heard his voice.
"Is that you, Lady Savona?"
"It's me, Belophus. Are you unharmed?"
"A few pleasurable injuries, but nothing debilitating. Butcher Bird and I made short work of the constructs that tried to impose their will on us."
He knocked on the hull of the gunship, which cycled its engines fiercely. Its assault cannons tracked their approach, and she hoped the craft had sated its bloodlust on the automatons.
"My serfs are all dead, though," Belophus continued. "You owe me new ones."
"I shall see that you get them, and more, Belophus, once we get back to the ship."
"And what about the chief apothecary?"
Korag asked, overhearing her.
"Shall we leave him here?"
Savona gestured to Sakara.
"He's still alive. That means the Manflayer is as well. But wherever he is, he can extricate himself well enough. We need to go, and now, before those things come back. Any objections?"
She looked around. Skarlagrim laughed.
"I like you, woman."
"The feeling is not mutual, fleshcrafter. Now, let's go."
Lights bloomed one by one in the dark. Beneath their harsh jade gaze, row upon row of protective canisters containing perfectly preserved progenoids were revealed. Fabius tried to count them all, but failed, so far back did they stretch. The markings on the canisters declaimed their origin, the lost gene tithe of the Third Legion. His heart all but skipped a beat to see them. Part of him had not believed that they still existed. He had half suspected that this was nothing more than some mad dream of Eidolon's. Instead, it was all too real.
"How many?" he asked softly. 17,456,
Trazin said from behind him.
"There were 18,000 when I acquired it, but some were lost in transit."
Fabius turned. They stood atop a wide observation dais, held aloft by humming anti-gravity generators. Silent warrior constructs, more heavily armored than the others, stood at attention nearby.
"Why are you showing me this?" "This is what you came for, is it not?"
Fabius frowned.
"You are taunting me." "No, not at all."
Trazin joined him at the edge of the platform.
"They were almost destroyed, you know. I saved them. By rights, you should thank me." "You stole them, you mean?" "I am no thief."
Trazin sounded almost insulted. He waved a hand. Hard light holograms shimmered into being all around them. Images of startling vividness swam about Fabius, and he read in them a secret history. Scenes from impossible antiquity, prompting memories dredged from his consumption of Aldari texts.
"I am a seeker into mystery, like yourself. I have catalogued the fall of civilizations and the birth of empires. One does not preclude the other. If you could see what I see, if you could perceive the beating heart of time as I perceive it, you would not question my methodology, Fabius Bile. You would have no more questions at all."
Trazin gestured with grandiose elegance.
"You pluck open flesh to learn its secrets. I do the same with time. I chop out the mechanisms of occurrence and study them at my leisure. This history of this galaxy is an open book to me, and my collection is the story of everything."
Fabius turned slowly, taking in the ghostly images as they drifted thick upon the air.
"And what is the point of recording such a story if there is no one to appreciate it?" "Yet."
"What?"
"No one to appreciate it yet."
Trazin's metal fingers tapped against his staff.
"I am no more unique in this universe than you. We are outliers, true. but not the whole of the species. And when my folk awake from their slumber of eons, I shall have a story to tell them.
He gave a rattling laugh.
I doubt they will appreciate it, or even listen, but one does not expect gratitude from the masses.
He glanced at his silent servants.
Dull-witted things.
Yes.
Fabius studied the ancient being.
How long have you been here? Longer than your race has possessed the ability to stand upright. You are immortal. I am persistent.
Trazin indicated one of the hard light images.
My race made a habit of persistence in the time of flesh. When faced with extinction, we chose instead a new way.
The image swelled, and Fabius saw something. A strange entity of starlight and malice. It watched as legions of living things marched into great furnace-like structures. The creatures were blurry, as if all memory of them had been eradicated, and all that was left was an absence. But what emerged from the burning heart of the edifices was easily recognizable.
Thus Necrontyr gave way to Necron, and we enslaved ourselves to infinity,
Trazin rasped.
Look at it, Fabius. Is it not wonderful and horrible?
The star being rose, vaguely humanoid in shape, blazing with searing cosmic energies. Awful and breathtaking to behold.
They ate stars, you know, and worlds besides. But we had the last laugh in the end.
Trazin chuckled.
We bound them in cages of harsh reality and used them to power our world engines.
Like this place, you mean, Fabius said. One of those things is here.
Yes, buried deep and safe, the crown jewel of my collection and the source of its power.
Trazin laughed again.
The source of my power.
He began to pace, circling Fabius slowly, as if judging his merits. Fabius tensed. The creature had not taken his weapons or made any attempt to harm him. Despite that, he knew he was in danger.
Madness, he said flatly. All of this, madness. You boast of power, but you are nothing more than a thief, and perhaps not even that.
Trazin stiffened.
Are you the being you were before you were poured into the metal sarcophagus, or are you merely the ghost of who and what you once were?
Fabius turned slowly, keeping the pacing metal figure in sight.
The same might be said of you. Are you even yourself, or are you merely a copy of a copy of a copy, the faded imprint of a thing long dead?
Trazin said. Fabius froze.
Yes, I know all about you, Fabius Bile.
He stopped and thumped the floor with the ferrule of his staff.
Perhaps I was wrong. Perhaps you lack the ability to conceive of true greatness. This galaxy is but a pale, shrunken husk of what it once was. Wonders and glories such as the human mind cannot comprehend. At best, you might glimpse a glimmer of its light, as if at the end of a great tunnel.
Then why are we even having this conversation?
Fabius leaned on Torment.
Why bother with this tete-a-tete if you have concluded there is such a gulf between us?
I was curious.
Fabius nodded in understanding.
Be that as it may, I see no benefit to circling one another like territorial primitives. If you wish to kill me, do so, and be done with it.
Trazin made a hissing sound that might have been a snicker.
I do not think that you would like that. I disabled your armor's cognitive pattern buffer. When was the last time you backed up your mind? recently, I hope, else the next you might be at quite a loss.
Fabius stiffened.
You know, as I said, I know all about you. It is quite impressive. I use something similar, though vastly superior in design and function myself. That you were able to cobble together something so useful with such crude materials is commendable. The signal has a faint aftertaste, let's say. Eldari, I think. A variation on their infinity circuit technology. I like to think of it as a neural gate of sorts, allowing for the flow of pertinent data between nodes.
Fabius tapped the side of his head.
Veins of specially cultivated wraith bone, inserted into the unoccupied cerebellum of clone bodies. Allowed to flourish within set parameters, it acts as a sort of tuning fork, calibrated to a single frequency. Mine. Very clever, in a primitive sort of way. A cleverness motivated by necessity, I suspect. My senses completed a thorough assessment of your biological status the moment you arrived. You are afflicted in a most pernicious way.
The blight, Fabius said flatly. I am aware.
No doubt. It always creeps back, does it not? It has buried itself so deep in your marrow that whatever soil you set your roots in rapidly goes sour.
The stubborn beast flesh.
Something, someone whispered. Fabius twitched.
I have made peace with my mortality. I persist only out of a sense of obligation. So I have heard.
Fabius paused.
From who?
He asked after a moment. Now they were getting to it. This creature knew him, had been expecting him. Why? Trazin gave a rattling laugh, like plates of metal clanging in a breeze.
From the one who sent you to me in return for a bauble from my collection. Eidolon, Fabius said.
His grip on Torment tightened.
He made no mention of you.
Trazin stared at him for a moment.
I journey to the world you call Harmony. I wish to see for myself the fruits of your labors.
Trazin's eyes brightened.
Such unique things in those ruins, so much so that I allowed myself to become distracted. The one you call Eidolon attacked me. He very nearly destroyed my body with that ululation of his. But an accord was reached. I had something he wanted, and he offered me something of equal value in return. You.
Fabius chuckled bitterly.
You offered him the gene tithe in order to save your own silver skin.
Trazin tensed and lifted his staff. Fabius hesitated, wondering which way to duck. Then, as if thinking better of it, Trazin set his staff back down.
And why do you seek it? Perhaps you hope that it holds the secret of that black weed strangling your body, one organ at a time.
Hardly.
Then why?
Fabius frowned.
A better question. Why did you want me?
Eidolon offering him up made perfect sense. It took him off the board, and in such a way that no blame would befall the Lord Commander Primus, should anyone, like Fulgrim, care to inquire about it.
You are unique in the universe, a legion of one, the father of monsters. And now, having baited your trap, you intend to confine me like a specimen in a cage. Doesn't that seem a waste to you?
Trazin stopped.
Explain. I could add to your collection greatly. That is my intent, yes. I meant more than simply myself. I'm not so unique as all that. There are worthier prizes to be had for the true collector.
Trazin hesitated.
you are stalling.
Yes, and you are listening. You say you seek to create a repository of all that exists, but that is a thankless task, filled with hardship.
Fabius sidled back out of reach of the staff.
The universe is a riot of the new. New species, new artifacts, new worlds. I-space alone would tax even your mania. But I could help you. My gene banks are full of samples taken from worlds without number. Whatever you wish, I can make, even if it is long extinct or newly risen.
Trazin lowered his staff.
The one called Eidolon said you were cunning. He said I should not listen to you, that I should take you unawares. Was he trying to cheat me of your true worth, do you think?
Fabius smiled.
Of course. Treachery comes as easily to him as breathing.
The same might be said of you.
Trazin emitted a harsh, buzzing sound that might have been a laugh.
But I know something of you, Fabius. That is why I agreed to the trade in the first place, and I know that you speak the truth in this. Perhaps, then, I should keep you here with me, awake and aware, so that you might bend your full attentions to the matter of my collection.
As a slave, you mean?
If you wish.
I do not.
Fabius let torment slide through his fingers until he gripped the end of the haft. If it came to it, he would have no choice but to take the risk. He studied Trazin, trying to discern a weak point in the mechanical being's form. It was like trying to isolate a single grain of sand on a beach. Something about Trazin defied even his enhanced senses. It would be down to instinct and luck.
A shame. But perhaps, after a few thousand years of stasis, you might reconsider.
Trazin did not move. Suddenly the chirurgeon hissed in warning. Fabius looked around and saw the silent guards lifting their strange, crackling weapons. One wrong move would see him annihilated, or worse, imprisoned. He ground his teeth in frustration, trying to think. There had to be something, anything he could do to buy himself just a bit more time. A few moments, even. Trazin lifted his staff.
It has been a most intriguing conversation, Lieutenant Commander Fabius. I look forward to many, many more in the epochs to come. But for now, I...
The dull clangor echoed through the still air like the tolling of some great funerary bell. Trazin swept his staff out, calling into being a hololithic pictfeed, showing another part of his vast museum. A large, curved shape rose into view.
"What is this now?"
Trazin said. Fabius recognized the cracked and broken shape of a webway portal suspended at the end of a walkway. As he watched, the stone set into the jagged shape of the portal began to flash and flare with internal light. Ancient systems cycling up for the first time in a long time. The arch of the portal was soon filled with strands of crackling light.
Curious. I do not recall activating that particular item.
Trazin gestured, and a hololithic control panel crackled into view. Metallic digits played across the alien controls.
It is resonating with something in orbit. Your ship, I believe.
The Wraithbone, Fabius murmured. How is that possible?
It would take longer than you have to live to explain it. It is opening from the other side. How delightful.
A pallid mist began to spew from the coruscating light within the arch. It flowed like a thing alive, curling slowly about struts and braces, as if testing the path for dangers. Coloured motes of light flashed within it, spinning and dancing wildly. Fabius watched as, a moment later, a gaudy shape detached itself from the pale mist and sprang into the open. A harlequin. It was soon followed by the rest of its troop. A dozen or more white-faced clowns spilled out into the hard reality of Solomace's corridors.
Ah, Eldari, cunning little vermin, always so cunning, so sharp that they often cut themselves as well as their enemies.
Trazin turned, watching more pickfeeds as they blossomed into visibility all around him, catching the intruders from every angle.
I possess examples of several subspecies in my collection. These, so gaudily arrayed, are new to me.
Would you like them? Fabius asked quickly. Trazin looked at him.
Are they yours to give?
He shrugged. I am the one offering. Trazin stared at him, unblinking for long moments. Then he turned back to the images.
They are curious creatures, aren't they? So full of knowledge and so selfish with it. That was at the heart of our war, I think. An inability to share this universe. That greed precipitated their decline. Now they are on the wane.
He reached out, as if to grasp the images, but his metal fingers passed through them.
They grow rare among the stars.
All the more reason to preserve these while they are close to hand.
And what do you wish in return for this generous offer?
Trazin was amused. It seemed the creature admired hubris.
Safe passage back to my ship.
Trazin thumped the ground with his staff.
Done. I will require your assistance, however.
He looked at Fabius.
Catching vermin requires the proper bait.